The subtler principles are always superior to the grosser ones because they are more pervasive in character. Hence, if water is superior to the earth principle or material principle, the fire principle is superior to the water principle. Tejo vava adbhyaha bhuyaha tada etad vayumagrihya akasham abhitapati tadahur nishochati nitapati varshishyati va iti teja eva tatpurvam darshayitva atha apasrijate tadetat urdhvabhischa tirashchibhischa vidyudbhi ahradascharanti tasmad ahur vidyotate stanayati varshishyati va iti teja eva tatpurvam darshayitva atha apah srijate teja upasveti. Narada says, the great master Sanat Kumar, the fire element is superior to the water element, which again is higher than the earth element. That heat, which is the function of fire, can dry up air and create such an atmosphere of warmth in the whole space or sky that you will feel that air itself is not present. In the atmospheric environment, fire can intensify its function, whereby the working of air can cease, especially when it is very hot. Then people say, Nishochati, Nitapati, oh, it is very hot, extremely, intolerably hot, etc., etc. Then people say it is going to rain. When it becomes very hot, you infer that perhaps it is going to rain. Nitapati, Varshashati va, iti, Teja eva tat purvam darashetva apasrijate. So water comes after the heat. First there is burning in the atmosphere, and then the water comes. So is the case with every other circumstance of intense heat, whether it is outwardly or inwardly. There is the production of the water principle on account of the intensity of the heat principle. Then you will have in the atmosphere, as a result of this heating up of the space and the air, lightnings and thunderbolts from every direction. Urdhvabhischa tirashchibhischa vidyudbhi ahradascharanti. You begin to hear rumbling sounds from the various quarters of the heavens, indicating that it is going to rain, all which is the work of the heating function of the fire. Then it falls in the form of rain, varshishyati. Therefore, teja eva tatpurvam darashetva atha apasrijate. So prior to the principle of water in all its functions is fire. And fire having manifested itself first, water element manifests itself afterwards. So having recognized the superiority of fire as the cause of water, subtler than water, regard the fire principle as the absolute for the purpose of meditation, teja upasveti. So is the case with air and space. Superior to the fire principle is the air principle. Higher than that is space, which contains everything within itself. All the elements can finally be reduced to space. During the pralaya or the dissolution of the universe at the end of time, the whole world is supposed to get absorbed into space. Only akasha exists. Earth gets dissolved in water, water gets dried up by fire, fire gets extinguished in air, and air is absorbed into space. So finally, space is the ultimate visible reality, most comprehensive, very expansive, inclusive of everything, almost resembling omnipresence, which you take as the object of your meditation. Akasho vava tejaso bhuyan akasho vai surya chandramasa ubho vidyun nakshatrani agnir akashena ahvayati akashena shrunoti akashena pratishrunoti akashe ramate akashe naramate akashe jayate akasham abhijayate akasham upasva iti. The importance of space cannot be appreciated unless space does not exist. It is the primary element that is necessary for the existence of anyone. Everything comes from that as an effect. Sun and moon and stars, lightning and what not, everything that is in the atmosphere is on account of the presence of space. You hear things on account of space. Echoes are produced on account of space. Our pleasures and pains also are due to the presence of space. There would be no objects at all if there is no space. And if there are no objects, there would be no reaction from our side in respect of the objects. Then there would be no experience at all, either of pleasure or of pain. So, akashe ramate, enjoyment of every kind, pleasure, satisfaction of every kind, is due to the spatial distinction among things. Even if there is sorrow, akashe naramate, even if there is absence of pleasure, it is due to the presence of space only. The peculiar location of the objects of sense in respect of the experiencing subject is the cause of the pleasure or the pain of the subject, all which is due to the interfering element, namely space. From space it is that everything comes. Things are born on account of the existence of space. There would be no production of any kind without space being present. An effect cannot be produced from a cause unless there is a spatial distinction between the two. Even the trees and plants rise up from the earth on account of the presence of space. Akasha jayate, akasham abhijayate. So you know what akasha or space means. The more we speak about it, the less would it be a type of definition of it. It is so important. It is perhaps the last conceivable object available to us in this world. Beyond that, nothing is possible for the mind to think. That is the highest physical object available. So, Narada, you take this as the object of meditation, finally, as the absolute, beyond which nothing is. The unbounded space, the unlimited expanse of sky, akasha, this may be the object of your meditation. Saya akasham brahmetyupaste akashavato vai salokan prakashavatah asambandhan urugayavatah abhisidhyati. If you can expand your mind to the extent of space in meditation, to that extent is your freedom and success and power in this world. Glorious would be the capacity of that person who can meditate in this manner. Luminosity would be the object of one's meditation. Space is luminous due to the presence of sun. So would be this meditation on space, illumined by the presence of the consciousness thereof. And unlimited would be the possession of this person. As space itself is unlimited, which is the object of one's meditation. So unlimited in every way would be the achievement of this person who so meditates. As long as there is space, so long as is your success. to the extent of the presence of space, to that extent is your freedom. How far is space, so far is your freedom also. So you will have unlimited freedom on account of this meditation on the unlimited space. Yavad akashasya gatam tatra asya yatha kamacharo bhavati. Ya akasham brahmeti upasti bhagavah akashat bhoyah. Narada asks, well, this is a grand thing, of course. I cannot think anything more than space. So is space the ultimate reality? Is there nothing beyond space? There is something beyond space. There is something without which even space cannot be conceived. Practically it cannot even exist. Space would be meaningless if something else superior to it does not exist. So there is something higher than space. What is that, please? Smaro vava akashat bhuya tasmad yadyapi bahava asiharan nasmarantaha naivate kanchana shrunuyuhu nam manmiran navijariran yadava te smareyuhu atha shrunuyuhu atha manmiran atha vijaniran smarena vai पुत्रान विजानाति स्मरेण पशून स्मरमुपास्य. Here smara is a peculiar term which has been interpreted as the power of consciousness which recognizes self-existence. Your consciousness of your own existence is prior to the operation of your consciousness in the form of the recognition of space outside you. You must exist first if space is to be there. So your consciousness of self-existence is prior as the determining factor of the consciousness of this vast expanse that you call space. So smara does not merely mean a kind of memory. That has already been mentioned earlier. So it cannot be memory. It is something superior to it. This self-existence which you feel as identical with your own consciousness, inseparable one from the other, is superior no doubt to space. If you yourself are not there, there is no question of space being there. Smaro vava akashat bhuyah. So if any person is there who has lost consciousness of his own existence or her own existence, there is no question of space. There is no question of hearing or thinking. No question of understanding. No function of any kind worthwhile will be possible if there is no self-consciousness. If you are not aware of your own existence, what is the good of thinking about space and fire and what not? So your self-consciousness, which means to say the self-consciousness of everyone, is superior to the perception of space which determines the character of space. Wherever there is the manifestation of this self-consciousness, the presence of I-hood, there knowledge arises of every kind. There is thinking, there is understanding, there is hearing, there is desire operating in so many ways. All your activity in life, whatever be the nature of that activity, is an offshoot of your own consciousness of your existence. Minus that, the whole world is a knot. Yas maram brahmetyupaste yavat smarasya gatam tatra asya yatha kamacharo bhavati yasmaram brahmeti upasate. This is a very superior type of meditation where you regard self-consciousness itself as an object. Now you are slowly turning from the objective side to the subjective side to rise further up yet, as it is to be mentioned in the further passages. One who could meditate in this manner as the supreme self-consciousness, prior to the perception of every kind of object, even space itself, that person is superior in that manner to that extent. And he has freedom as long as there is self-consciousness. Yatha kamachara bhavati. This is a startling turning point in the process of meditation. Generally, we take all objects of meditation as being outside us, located in space. We never for a moment imagine that objects have something to do with our own self-existence. The relationship between the consciousness of an object and the object of consciousness escapes the notice of consciousness, so that we always take for granted that objects are independent, absolutely existing outside, hanging in space, unconnected with the other things, including one's own self. This is not true. That objects are there independently hanging in space, independent of even the consciousness of their existence, is not a truth. They have some connection, a relative correlativity of being is manifested by every object, and their nature, their character, their reaction is entirely in relation to the nature and the location and the character of the subject perceiving or experiencing them. This is a higher knowledge which is not available to the ordinary layman, who always mistakes objects for independent things outside and depends on them, hangs on them as if they are his support entirely, not knowing that he himself is a contributory factor in the very existence and operation of the objects of sense outside. So to turn to the inside from the outside is a great achievement indeed, which is not easily possible for ordinary people. So suddenly there is a shift of emphasis from the external to the internal now, when Sanat Kumara says that self-consciousness is superior to everything that I have told you up to this time, including space itself, which means to say the whole world of externality. But is there something superior to this? What is this self-existence? My consciousness of my own being, is it ultimate? But is there something more than that? May I know? Yes, there is something more than that also. This self-existence of yours, of which you are conscious, is not the ultimate reality. It is also an effect of something superior to it. What is that? Asha va vasmarad bhuya yasya asha iddha smaro mantra nadhite karmani krute putramascha pashumascha icchate ivam cha lokam amam cha icchate asha upasveti. This peculiar thing called self-awareness or self-existence is not complete in itself. Its very existence is dependent upon an urge that is present prior to it. We live on account of a kind of hope in our lives. We do not live on account of our present experiences merely. There is something within us which keeps us stuck to this self-consciousness, which is the betterment of our lives in the future. Here mentioned in this section of the Upanishad is asha or hope, aspiration. Here it means aspiration for self-transcendence. Your very existence is valuable only on account of the tendency present in this self-consciousness to transcend itself into higher modes of being. You are happy in this world merely because of the hope that you will be happy tomorrow, not that you are happy today. This consciousness is not visible outside. it is not a direct experience of any human being, but it is invisibly working from within. Our desire to exist is a peculiar character in us. We cannot logically argue out the reason behind our desire to exist. It is a super logical mystery which we ourselves are. But the desire to exist, which is actually what Sanat Kumara meant by saying smara or self-existence, is not a mere desire to exist as a body. People do not want to die. They want to continue their existence as long as possible. They pray for long life, but they do not understand what actually is meant by long life. It is not a desire to persist in this physical body. Unconsciously, as it were, we are asking for something whose nature is not clear to our own minds. We are asking for a self-transcended existence. It is not an existence in this limited personality of ours. Who would like to be in this particular body only for a long time? Which part of your life would like to perpetuate? Old age, young age, childhood? Which part of your life is to be perpetuated? You can't say any particular aspect of your life is to be perpetuated. It is a confusion in the mind when we ask for long life. But what the intention is in our mind behind this asking for long life or desiring for long life is that we want to perpetuate the essentiality of our existence. Now this existence is naturally not what we call bodily existence. Though we mistakenly identify our existence with the body, there is a subtle urge within us to exceed or go beyond the limitations of our bodily existence, which is the reason why we ask for more and more of things, accumulate more and more of objects, so that externally we may expand the magnitude of our being. And also we ask for longevity. We want to be perpetuated in time and expanded in space. This is our desire. We have got only two desires: to expand ourselves in space and to perpetuate ourselves in time. So this is what we are asking for in all our activities. We want to possess more and more of things, as much as possible, entire space, which means to say you want to expand your personality into spatial domination. And also for a long time, as long as possible. Not tomorrow, not day after tomorrow, endlessly, as much as possible. So it is a desire for infinity and eternity that is present in you, of which you are not conscious, but foolishly you think that you as if you want to exist in this body. This aspiration is the asha, hope for a betterment in your life. Aspiration towards self-transcendence is prior to mere self-existence. Therefore, Sanat Kumara here speaks to Narada and says, this must be your object of meditation, not merely your bodily self-existence. There is something which is implied in your self-existence. That implication should become the content of your consciousness and therefore the object of your meditation. Saya asham brahmetyu paste ashaya asya sarve kama samrudhyanti amogha hi asya आशिष्ट भवन्ति यावद् आशायाः गतम् तत्र अस्य यथा कामाचारो भवति. Your aspirations shall be fulfilled. No desire can go unfulfilled. If your aspiration is for a high thing, that also shall come. So may your aspiration rise beyond the limits of bodily existence merely and reach up to the higher implications of this self-existence which you are. And to that extent will be your success and your freedom. Yatha kamachara bhavati ya asham brahmetyupaste asti bhagava ashaya bhuya iti. Ashaya bhuya asti sanme bhagavan bhavit iti. This is very great and grand. Is there something more than this? Endlessly Narada is going on asking questions and limitless answers are being given. There is something greater than this aspiration for self-transcendence. This is not an object of one's thought, really speaking. That is the principle of life. Nobody can understand what life is. We utter the word life many times, but we cannot explain what it means. It is not what we do daily that is called life. Though we generally identify life with our activity, it is not. Life is something inscrutable. It is exactly what we are. This is called here prana. It is not a breathing process, but the life principle itself, without which there would be neither aspiration for anything nor self-consciousness, nothing of the kind. The entry of the universal into the particular is the juncture, which is called life operating in our personalities. It is the borderland to the infinite, where the individual expires into the expanse of the infinite and the infinite contracts itself into the finite. That particular junction is what you call life. Therefore, it is inscrutable. It is neither individual nor universal. You don't know what it is. Yet, it has the characteristic of both. So, we are unable to define what life is. But that principle of life is superior to everything else. That is what you call the reality of life. It is not merely the activity of life, the function of life, or social life, or personal life, or any kind of manifestation of it, but as such what life is. That is called prana. It is superior to everything. Nobody knows what it is. And the Upanishads tell us how inscrutable it is. Pranova asaya bhuyaha. Beyond all things that I have told you up to this time, life is superior. Yathava ara nabho samarpitah eva masmin prane sarvam samarpitam. As spokes are fixed in the belly of a wheel, so are everything fixed in the principle of life. Prana pranena yati, prana pranam dadati, pranaya dadati, prano hi pita, prano mata, prano bhrata, prana sasa, prana acharya, prano brahmana. Whatever you call in this world as something worthwhile, living or meaningful is nothing but prana. Minus life, everything is meaningless. He is my father, he is my mother, he is my sister, it is my brother. What do you mean by saying all these things? You do not know yourself. You are not referring to these bodies as father, mother, sister, etc. Something else in them. That is the father, that is the mother, that is the brother, that is the sister, that is everything blessed. You yourself, you do not know what you are when you speak about yourself. Your importance vanishes when the life principle in you is withdrawn. You are valuable only so long as you are living. If you have no life, you don't know what you are gone. So what you regard yourself as being in the parlance of empirical knowledge is not your real personality. How is it? Why do you say that life is superior to everything and minus life everything is valueless? The Upanishad says, if you speak irreverently to your father, for instance, people say, how stupid this person is. He talks irreverently to your father, to the mother, to your relative, to your reverent person. We revere great people, we value humanity, we respect life in this world. This is something well known to us. Sayadi pitaram va mataram va bhrataram va sasaram va acharyam va brahmanam va kinchit brashamiva pratyaha dhrittvam astu iti enamahuhu. High upon you, say people, when you talk irreverently to elderly ones or behave in a stupid manner, which would not be becoming of you in a human society. And if you behave in such a way, in respect of elders, they say, it is like himsa done to people. You are injuring them. You tell, don't hurt people. What do you mean by don't hurt people? Hurting whom? Hurting people, but what is people? Not the bodies. The Upanishad says, you are here enjoined not to hurt the life in them. The life principle in a person is affected by your reaction to that person. The manifestation of the life principle in the bodily embodiment of a particular person is what is referred to as a person. So a person is nothing but the life in that person, not the mere shape of the person in the form of a body. So when they say you have behaved in such and such a way with your father, with your mother, with your sister, with your brother, with this and with that, they mean to say that you have behaved in such and such a way with the life principle present in them, not merely with the bodies. But suppose the life principle has gone from the father, that revered one whom you have been worshipping, what happens to that? You simply set fire to that father. You throw him, you prick him with pokes in the funeral pyre. People do not say anything, oh, this man is burning his father. Nobody says like that. What happened to that father? The very same father whom you revered is just before your eyes, and you are setting fire to him in the funeral pyre. And it may be your sister, it may be your guru, it may be anybody, it makes no difference to you. It may be an emperor whom you have been respecting so much and regarding so much, and now you throw him into the pits and bury him in the ground or float him in the water, set fire to him, and everybody says very good, nice, very beautiful. How is it possible? You set fire to your father and then say it is beautiful, it's a great ritual that you are performing, but when he is alive, if you do that, it is a murder, it is a great heinous crime. So what is your definition of father? What is your definition of mankind or humanity or any worthwhile thing in this world? Not the bodies. If the body was your father, you would not set fire to him in the funeral pyre. And you would not prick him with pokes as if he means nothing. Even the dearest and the nearest ones are cast aside if life principle is withdrawn from them. So what you loved as your relatives and dear ones and near ones was the life, not the body. But we never understood this point. We say, oh, my father is gone. Where has he gone? He was not there even previously. He is there in the way in which he was, but we mistook him for something else. So, Narada, it is the principle of life that is valuable in this world, nothing that is manifest as forms, nama and rupa. Atha yadi api enan utkranta pranan shulena samasam vyati sandahet na eva enam ruyo pitrahasiti न मातृहासीति न भ्रातृहासीति न स्वजृहासीति न आचार्यहासीति न ब्राह्मणहासीति प्राणो हि एव एतानि सर्वाणि भवति. सो ही क्लिंचेस द होल मैटर बाय सेइंग द होल ऑफ लाइफ इज नथिंग बट द इनस्क्रूटेबल थिंग यू कॉल प्राण. दिस इज द ग्रेट रियलिटी मैनिफेस्टिंग इटसेल्फ इन नेम्स एंड फॉर्म्स. We mistake the names and forms for this Supreme Being, which is masquerading here as the objects of sense, as human beings, and everything that receives our eyes. The supreme reality of every form of visible existence is life manifest in some degree. It is manifest in some degree in plants, in greater degree in animals, and still greater degree in the human beings, and it has to manifest itself in further degrees higher up. So here, Narada, we have come to a point where it is difficult to understand where we are. We are in an inscrutable realm. We cannot understand still as to what we are speaking about. It appears as if we have understood what life is, but still we have not understood what it is. It is a mystery that is operating in names and forms. And whoever understands this mystery as the all-comprehensive reality, which is superior to all names and forms, which is infused into all names and forms, which is the reality of even the names and forms, including the name and form of your own self, a person who has such a knowledge, he is the master of knowledge. He is called in the Upanishad as Ativadi. A specific term here indicating one who possesses surpassing knowledge and whose utterances are surpassingly true. Prano hyeva etani sarvani bhavati sava esha evam pashyan evam manvana evam vijanativadi bhavati tam ched bruyu ativadyasiti ativadyasmiti bruyannapahknu vita. The greatest knowledge is the knowledge of life, not merely the objects of sense. Whoever sees this reality as it is in itself, whoever can think in this manner, whoever can understand in this way, his knowledge is transcendent. Because here the knowledge has gone beyond all objects of sense. It has comprehended them in its own being. And therefore, knowledge has become one with truth. It is not merely a pursuit of truth that we are referring to here as knowledge, but truth itself that has become one with knowledge. A person who has such a knowledge has really comprehended truth. And what one speaks in such a state of knowledge is called Ativada. Ativada is transcendent speech. Speech which is pregnant with truth. Speech which is going to materialize in life as truthfulness. Whatever a person of that, with that knowledge speaks will become material, will get materialized in life. Because the truth or the reality of all things is contained in the knowledge which this person has. And therefore, speech being an expression of one's thought and knowledge, whatever one utters becomes true in this state of experience. And if people cannot understand you, and they tell you, yes, you are speaking something which we cannot understand, the Upanishad says, yes, truly so. You must say, I speak something which you cannot understand. Because this is a matter which is not supposed to be understood by your mind. Here we are not in a realm of understanding of objects of sense. Here we are in a realm of being with things. So one who is capable of tuning oneself in being with the being of the objects of knowledge, such a person alone can understand what this truth of exposition is. So it is true, no doubt, that when the Upanishad speaks like this, it speaks what one cannot understand. And it is not intended to be understood also by the layman whose mind has not been transformed into the fiber of being. Because here we are being led gradually from mere sensation and perception from mentation and understanding to the intuition of objects, wherein the objects have become one with the knowing perceiver, knowing reality, the subject. Narada is unable to speak. His breath is held up as it were. He does not know what he is hearing from this great master. But the master, observing the silence of the disciple, he does not say, please let me know if something more is there. He keeps quiet. His mouth is hushed. His mind has stopped thinking. He does not know what to speak in this condition. So the master himself starts pursuing the subject without being accosted by the disciple. Esha tuva ati vadati yasatyena ati vadati. Transcendent speech is an expression of transcendent knowledge. And transcendent knowledge is that knowledge which is identical with transcendent truth. This is the peak of experience, peak of wisdom. Esha tuva ati vadati yasatyena ati vadati. Your speech should be based on the reality of being. Only then it manifests itself as reality. Else your speech may not turn to be true. Truth and reality are identical. Your speech becomes true because your speech is based on the knowledge of the true. This is what Sanat Kumara is telling when he says, Iha satyena ativadati, sava ativadati. Well, my master, then I would like to be like that, says Narada. Soham bhagavah satyena ativadani. Please initiate me into this mystery of acquiring that knowledge which is tuned up to reality, which is one with being. Is it possible for me to have this knowledge? Satyam tueva vijijnasitavyam. My dear Narada, you want a knowledge which is tuned up with reality, but you must know what reality is. Unless you know what truth is, how can you try to identify your knowledge with truth or truth with knowledge? You must have a clear conception of what I mean by truth. Only then you can have an aspiration for identifying your knowledge with truth and knowing truth and speaking truth. Then, Master, I would like to know what truth is. Please tell me. Satyam bhagavo vijijnyasa iti. Now, what is truth? Yada vai vijanati atha satyam vadati. Na vijanan satyam vadati. Again, we are in a vicious circle of argument, as it were. You want to know what is truth? Truth has to be known as it is and not as it appears. There are various types of truth before us. We say this is true, that is true, and everything is true. But is it ultimately true? So we must have a clear conception of what ultimate reality is. You can speak truth only when you know what truth is. Otherwise, how can you speak truth? But do you know what truth is? Truth is not what you perceive as true in this empirical world. The whole world is not true. So how can you say that anything in the world is true? So whatever you speak is not true. But you must know what really true is. When one knows what truth is, then one speaks truth. So, Narada is instructed in this manner. Yada vai vijanati atha satyam vadati na vijanan satyam vadati. An ignoramus cannot speak truth. Vijananeva satyam vadati, vijnanam tve vajijnasidavyam, knowledge of truth is therefore very important, and that has to be known. You have to know knowledge itself. Because it is knowledge that comprehends truth. But what is knowledge? What is truth and what is knowledge? We are here entering into the difficult subject of the ultimate principles of our very life, knowledge and truth and knowledge, satya and jnana. What is truth and what is knowledge? This must be known. Without that, you can't proceed further. Yada vai manute atha vijanati, namatva vijanati, matteva vijanati, matisteva vijijnasitavya, iti matim bhagavo vijijnasa iti. The words used in these passages of the Upanishad carry a meaning much more deep than what appears on the surface. Because we are treading upon forbidden lands, as it were, where the mind cannot easily reach, where things go almost beyond us and above our heads. We do not know what we are speaking and what we are hearing. Such is the condition that is being explained here. Such is the state which is being initiated into by Sarat Kumara, the great master, in respect of his disciple. There is something higher than this knowledge or aspiration for truth. What is that? What are you speaking about? The tendency of one's being to move towards reality is the very reason behind your aspiring for reality. How do you know that reality is to be known? Who put this idea into your head? You say, I must know God, I must search for reality, I must aspire for the Absolute. How did this idea arise in your mind? There is a tendency in you to move towards the reality. That tendency is prior to your consciousness of reality being your object of aspiration. You cannot be conscious of this urge itself. It is prior to everything else. Nobody knows what this urge is, from where it comes. Ishvaranugrahadeva pumsam advaitavasana, says the great master, the Tatreya. You do not know how aspiration arises in our minds. It has not come due to our efforts, because effort cannot be there without knowledge. But the question is, how this knowledge has arisen? So they say, perhaps it is God's grace, or you may call it the grace of the Absolute, or the mysterious outcome of the very process of evolution which is egged on by some principle of which we have no idea, and the purpose of which is far, far beyond our understanding. So, Narada, beyond and prior to everything that is in you, including your knowledge of reality, including your query about the knowledge of reality, including your aspiration for it, behind everything is a tendency in you to move towards it. That is the object of your meditation now. The mind has stopped thinking completely. It does not know what to think at all. Yada vai manute atha vijanati. Only when this tendency, this inclination of your total being is there towards reality, only then can you have an aspiration for reality. Not otherwise. oh well, this is what I want. How is it possible? I want to have knowledge of this mystery that you are speaking of. Yada vai shraddha dhati atha manute. Faith in the existence of reality and the working of this tendency of one's being towards reality, they are simultaneous almost. How do you know that reality exists? That is a faith that is in your mind, introduced into you by the very tendency of reality urging itself forward towards its own self-realization. This faith superior, which is not what you call blind faith, but an irrepressible feeling in you that reality is Asti Brahma. It must be there. You don't have a doubt about its being. They go together with the working of this tendency in you. So Narada is told here that this faith in the very existence of reality is somehow to be taken as prior to the consciousness of this tendency of reality working through your being. Yada vai shraddha dhati atha manute, when this faith is present in you, you have to differentiate ordinary faith from this superior faith that he is speaking of. It is almost a kind of realization. Without that faith in you, which is born of tremendous experience of a higher caliber, nothing else is possible. This faith I want, please implant it in me, O great master. When you have steadfastness in reality, then this faith also comes. You become one with this reality, as it were, in your psychological being. That is called nishtha. He says, when there is nishtha, there is shraddha. When there is shraddha, there is this tendency in you towards reality. Yada vai nistishthati atha shraddhadhati. Na anistishthan shraddhadhati. Nistishthan neva shraddhadhati. Nishtharte vijijnashadavya. Nishtham bhagavo vijijnasaiti. What is steadfastness in reality? It is an incapacity of the mind to contemplate anything except reality. You think only that, otherwise nothing. The very function of the mind is set in tune with the nature of reality so profoundly that you have virtually become that. This is the cause of the faith in you, the working of the tendency in you of reality, mentioned already. All this is the effect of another important factor. A self-control that has been exercised by you either or arisen in you automatically, whatever the reason be behind it, which means to say a withdrawal of consciousness from every kind of external perception. This is a superior activity that you are performing. Your attunement with the nature of reality in contemplation is due to the self-control that you have exercised in your being, which means to say that your senses have weaned themselves from their contact with things outside and never anymore regard the objects of sense as being outside the knowledge that are aspiring for. So self-control does not mean a pressure exerted upon the senses by force of will, but a spontaneous withdrawal of consciousness from its desire to externalize itself in respect of outward things on account of this faith, on account of this aspiration, on account of this knowledge. The individuality in you the jivatva in you, the personality in you, the subjectness that has been responsible for your perception of the objects of sense outside, this has become null and void automatically on account of consciousness ceasing to work in terms of objects of sense. When the objects of sense cease to be, the subject also ceases to be. When one thing goes, the other thing also goes. So when the world has gone, you also have gone. There is nothing either side, on the object side or the subject side. This great achievement is prior to everything, transcendent to everything, Narada. Yada vaikaroti atha nistishthati na kritva nistishthati kritva eva nistishthati kritisteva vijijnyasa davya iti kritim bhagavo vijijnyasa. What is this great achievement of the human personality in respect of the ultimate absolute? Can I be enlightened a little further about this supreme achievement? How can I achieve this at all? What is this action of self-control that you are enjoining upon me as a very necessary thing, as preceding every other activity conceivable? Well, nothing can be done unless it is propelled by happiness. Everywhere you will find happiness is the object of every kind of aspiration, activity, desire or enterprise. You will find prior to everything conceivable there is the presence of happiness. Everybody, everyone, irrespective of the character of one's individuality, were to be, to act, and to conduct yourself in different ways, how can you know anything else? You must know first of all what happiness is. It is this that is the propelling force behind everything in creation. The whole process of creation and manifestation, evolution and involution, whatever you call it, the entire activity of the cosmos is an urge of happiness. It is happiness that is trying to recover its own consciousness and establish itself in its own pristine all-comprehensiveness. It is this that is called activity. It is this that is called enterprise. It is this that is called aspiration. It is this that is called cosmic evolution. Happiness is at the back of everything. Yada vai sukham labhate atha karoti. Na sukham labdha karoti. Sukham eva labdha karoti. Sukham tu eva jijnyasitavyam. Know what happiness is. Hari Om Tat Sat.